so excited that happened on the very first try? Must be a good omen for this evening. It's great to be with you. Last week we talked about connection with people, and we spent a lot of time on the topic of victimhood, which was a very powerful conversation. And thank you for Catherine bringing that up so that we could dive deeply into those issues. And we can, because we're all a little bit of that in us. We're hanging on to those things that are in our sack. And it's like, gosh, if I decide to change how I hold this from being a burden that's been weighing on me to putting it in my heart and using as a tool to bless the lives of other people, that shift, so fundamental in connection with people, gosh, what will I have as an excuse for not performing? This has been my reason for all my problems and woes in my life. As I mentioned last week, some of these things are very real and very painful. Most of them are. So we don't want to minimize the pain. We just know that carrying them around as a burden doesn't serve us. It just wears us out. And when we bring that burden to somebody else's life, we wear them out. But if we make that choice to say, this is painful, but I'm tired of dragging it. I want to use this differently. I want to use it as a tool, as an experience that will help me better understand what someone else is experiencing and take down their walls of resistance and have their cooperation and productivity flood out to me. What a great moment. I want to emphasize one last piece on connection before we move forward. Somebody asked me to define connection, and connection occurs when a person feels understood. Not that we understand them, they feel understood. They know that we know where they are, and we didn't try to fix them. We've said this several times over the weeks and months in the past. When was the last time someone cared enough about you to step into your world and listen until you felt understood? And then they didn't try to fix you. So I've asked that question numerous times. I'm going to ask it tomorrow night in Houston when I'm speaking. And I can tell you that out of all the people there, there'll be very few that will raise their hand, if any. It is so rare. And our mission is to become the rare one, the one who actually does that for others. As we're coming up on this wonderful holiday season, Thanksgiving, Hanukkah, Christmas, what a wonderful opportunity with family and friends to be the rare one, the one who listens. I had a wonderful exchange with a client today. Now, a client has been very angry with a person in her life. And I helped her write an email this morning, and it was a very kind response to a previous email. And she wrote back and said, oh, this is kind of sappy. It feels like I'm being fake or phony to write this. And I said, oh, what a great moment. What a great moment. Because here we are. We're so attached to our anger, we think that's who we are. When the truth is, that's an unhealthy habit of thinking. Trying to yank us out of this chair. Trying to stop us from being our true self. When we're our true self, we experience peace. When we're angry, resentment, resistance, frustration, hurt. Truth of the matter is, that when we're on our best behavior, we're actually noticing other people and commenting. Even though it may feel uncomfortable because we may feel like we're making this up, no, we're actually finally being aware. When we choose not to lash back, we choose to be kind, we're finally being aware. This is what awareness looks like. And with it comes peace. So even though it may not have been our most common dominant behavior. Our dominant behavior may not be our true self. We may have been surrendering to some unhealthy habits of thinking for a long time. When we're on our best behavior, that's when we're being our true self. When we need to let our hair down, or we feel like we just need to speak the truth, you feel that kind of energy, that's when we surrender to those unhealthy habits of thinking. And we say and do things that cause challenges for us and harm other people. So let us be on our best behavior. Well, tonight we're going to move into I think my favorite area of discussion, because when we talk about connection last week, we're talking about most people's natural strength. Whether it's been used or not, they have tremendous ability to do this. We come to this area called mental creation, and here we find an extremely powerful gift that can ignite passion. Passion that will drive the action necessary to create our dreams. That's what it's designed to do. Nobody gets to skip the work of creation. Nobody. We don't manifest tangible reality into existence. We use our vivid visualization to get inspired ideas and act on them. And we see miraculous things unfold in our life. It feels like it's being manifest, but it's because we're taking action on an inspired idea. We're using our mind, mental creation, our mind, to get inspired ideas. I want to take you into space tonight. That's so important. We've been here a couple times before, but it seems to be a real challenge for many of us to understand. And I'm going to do my very best tonight to take us into this space. I want you to write down on a piece of paper, what is my secret desire? What is the secret desire of my heart? What's the secret desire of my heart? And the way we can discover it is to become increasingly conscious about where our mind goes when we're privately by ourselves. It's by ourselves, it's private, we're thinking. What are we thinking about? Are we thinking about big houses and cars and being out of debt and no more stress and no more pain and finally being past all the challenges? Do we spend any time in that space? Because if that is our secret desire, and you're not creating the dreams that you have, just know that that's the reason why. Our cry to the universe, if you will, is I want it easy. Our cry to the universe is I don't want any more stress or pain. I'm tired. I'm overwhelmed. I'm exhausted. I just want to have this over with. And you remember that in my darkest night, doesn't get any darker, I cried out, I longed to cry to the God of my youth, but the God of my youth will not hear my cry. I must change my God or change my cry. My cry was I wanted to be rescued. I wanted to be saved from my problems. I wanted my debts to go away. I wanted to be happy. That cry doesn't get answered. That was a great lesson, pivotal lesson in my life. What I discovered is that when we go into creation and change our intention, our secret desire, and this will take a little bit of effort for some of us to make this shift. But it's the choice to, you remember these words, engage in life. I'm going to engage. I'm going to make my days matter. Scroll 5, I'll live this day as if it is my last. I'll not let one drop spill upon the sand. I'll waste not a moment. Mourning yesterday's defeats, yesterday's aches of the heart. For why should I throw good today, after bad, the mistakes of the past? Why would I do that? I want to engage in life. I'm going to embrace the principles of creation. And part of the principles of creation, the most difficult one to handle, is this one. We are generally taught the lessons of life through challenges and obstacles. That's how we're taught. They are our teachers. We don't get to avoid them. And most of the world, when they hit this challenge or this problem, it's an interruption. It's an impediment. embrace the principles of creation. We say, I want to get to a certain place, and what the universe is saying to me, I've got some lessons to learn. What could I learn from this? How could this make me more empathetic? How is this uniquely preparing me to serve the people I want to serve to create my dreams? That's how we start to look at life. Og tells us in Scroll 10 to welcome the obstacles that cause other people failure. Why would we welcome them? We're not asking for them. It's when they come, we see them differently. That's embracing the principles of creation. One of the other things we're embracing is that we stay in creation. We don't spend any time in fantasy or catastrophe. We're constantly thinking about what could be created to move something forward. Three, we're going to connect with people, because that's the greatest secret of success in all ventures. We don't succeed without people, serving people. We're going to create value. That means whether I've got an hourly job working somewhere, or I'm volunteering my time, or I own my own business, wherever I am and whatever I'm doing it to my very best ability, regardless of pay or title or recognition. I create value everywhere I go and with everyone I meet. And the reason why that one's so powerful is when we're in that place, we are with our true self. We get to meet our gifts and talents. We get to spend time with us, minus all the negative dialogue. Oh my goodness, it heals our self-esteem. We talk about procrastination. We'll talk about next week. Even we're surprised. Wow. That wasn't so hard. Wow. And lastly, we want to be contributors. We want to be able to give back. If you're in a church, that would be a tithe. It's a holiday season. Find a family who needs something more than you need it, and bless their life. Sub for Santa programs, that's giving back. Working a soup kitchen, that's giving back. Doing a kindness for a neighbor, that's giving back. My parents are down in St. George. They were in Arizona. St. George, which is southern Utah. And they had a freak snowstorm 2 days ago. A freak snowstorm. They don't get snow. They don't have any snow removal equipment down there. My parents had 6 inches of snow on their ground. Now, for some, that's nothing. Here we've got 2 feet already. In my backyard, I got 2 feet of snow. Ah! But that snow paralyzed the city. Absolutely paralyzed the city. Planes could not fly in or take off. Buses could not travel on the roads. The roads were so covered with snow, they said, stay home. Churches canceled all their meetings on Sunday. All the services were closed. Isn't that amazing? Here's the secret. Next door lives Wally. Just love Wally. My mother heard somebody out on the front porch and opened the door to see that her sidewalk and her driveway had just been shoveled by Wally. One of many incredible kindnesses. That's contributing. Seeing a need and filling it. Doesn't have to be anything we spend money on. It could be just service like Wally gave to my parents this week. What an amazing person. So, engage, embrace, connect and serve, create value, contribute. In that spirit, in that energy, we ask, what can I create? How can I create that? I just want you to pause for a moment and hear some of the dialogue that might be showing up. Yes, but David, you don't know what I'm going through. David, you don't know how tough this is. David, you don't know how frustrating that makes me feel. All this dialogue is playing in your mind, and I'm going, can you hear it? That's what we're talking about. This is where the rubber meets the road. That's the dialogue that keeps us from exercising the principles that will create our dreams, because if we can embrace those five principles and be seeking to know what we can create and how we can create it, my promise to you is that you will get an inspired idea You have an idea of how to do it. Phew. Bam. Lights up part of our brain. It's normally dormant in a human being. Ignites our passion. And it drives us. Our focus, our discipline, our effort, and our actions. This is the fire of passion. This is where it's ignited. And if our intention is not true to the five principles I shared with you, if it's about no more stress or no more pain or ease, I just want that manifest so I can do this. Well, we're asking for something that no power in this universe will ever grant. Just won't grant it. Because we're asking to rob ourselves of the very opportunity to stretch and grow and become. We want all the stuff before we become capable of even handling it. Oh, the wisdom in becoming versus just getting, taking, receiving. Let us focus on becoming, because we can do the other ad nauseum, and we will never see our dreams manifest. We'll just live in frustration and bitterness. We'll cry out, what's wrong with me? Why can't I have it? I can almost touch it. I can almost taste it. What's wrong with me? Am I broken? Am I sick? Does God not love me? That's the dialogue we start to have. So take a look at your assessment tonight. Look at the bottom right-hand side, mental creation. See if there are any orange or red measurements in these areas of thinking about our life. Then look up at joy in the journey. Say, ooh, is there any orange or red here saying it's not showing up the way I would like it to? And take a look up at self-esteem. And go, and what's happening? Am I turning inward and saying, what's wrong with me? Am I questioning my worth and my worthiness, my ability, my beliefs? Am I believing I need to sacrifice time, energy, even well-being to somehow make this happen? Am I feeling shameful or guilty because it's not? What's happening up there? Because it's all driven by this mental creation. What are we doing here? Because once we've decided that we want to create our very best life, once we've decided that we will embrace this secret desire and real intention of engaging, embracing, connecting, serving, creating value, and contributing, once we've made that decision, now we want to be able to apply that desire, that secret desire, to some very specific exercises. These exercises will not work without the underlying desire being in alignment with creation. Otherwise, it's just an exercise in futility. We'll want to have the underlying desire, because with that desire, I'm going to walk through the five of them with you. Mental rehearsal. We go into the future. Like, for an example, I'm speaking tomorrow afternoon at 3 o'clock in Houston. This afternoon, I spent some time in Houston. I know at 4 o'clock this morning, I'll wake up, preparation to go to the airplane, to take the flight. I'll be thinking about these people, stepping into their world. What can I create? How can I create that? How will that serve? Yes, I have PowerPoints, but they could be changed at any time. I could shut my computer down and just have a conversation. So I'm looking into these people's worlds. What could I create? How could I create that? Had an idea this afternoon, changed a whole bunch of PowerPoint slides. I got a vision, an idea. Wow, that could be cool. Why don't we do that? It's going to be very different than the speech I gave to the same organization in Seattle 2 weeks ago. Because this group needs something different, apparently. Because I trust that if my desire is in alignment with creation, and I'm seeking to lift and build and bless a life, that the inspiration that comes, needs to be followed. We can trust it. Now we'll find out tomorrow. I'll actually take action and do it. And at the end of this 3-hour presentation, I'll have a confirmation of whether or not it was inspired. And it's been my experience over and over again, the confirmation comes. Validation. This is a great way to live, where we go into the future, short term, next day, too, maybe a week. Think about if you're a Christian and you practice Christmas, you celebrate Christmas, I should say, and you're thinking about presents for someone, be thinking about an idea. This year we're coming back from Thanksgiving, and I was talking to Ramona, and I said, I really want our family to do something different this year. So we explored a possibility. Instead of giving presents to all our adult children, we're taking all of those funds, we're selecting a family, and they really don't have a need for something major, but there's a family who needs a lot of little things. So we'll take those funds, and we'll create a Christmas for a family. And they're excited about that, because they'll go out and help shop for it and pick up the presents and wrap them, and we'll go as a family and deliver it. Won't that be a fun thing to do for Christmas? I can just see the vision. I'm excited about what will happen after that with our children and grandchildren, who will all be a part of that exercise. That's a mental rehearsal. Need to follow that. Number two is an inspiration. If there's anyone I can serve, put them on my path and I'll serve them. I just know that if any of us are having challenges in our lives, the greatest way to address our own challenges is to serve another person. May we have the courage to do so, to reach out and serve. Generally, we find out somebody else's problems are far worse than ours. We'll take ours. If you want to read a fun poem, go to the internet and look up The Trouble Pile. The Trouble Pile, and read it this Christmas. Great little poem about when we see other people's troubles, we keep our own. That's inspiration. My promise to you is if you did this every single day and before you went to bed at night, you know who that person was. You know who that person is that needed you today. You'll be at such peace. You'll be connected, plugged into the planet. And doors will open. Doors of opportunity will open. That's how it works. We plug in first, then the doors open. Number three, we want to explore possibilities. We often make very quick decisions about major things. We really need to think through them. We're caught up in the emotion of the moment. This new car we want to buy, and we talk ourselves into, I can handle that payment, and we dismiss it, and then all of a sudden we drive it home, and 2 months later we're facing that payment going, what have I done? What have I done? And 3 years later, when we're still paying that payment, and the car now has a lot of miles on and a few scratches, it's even worse. What have I done? I want to explore this. Explore the possibilities. What is it going to be like? And how's it going to depreciate, and what's it going to be like? So we're not just caught up in the moment. That helps us make better long-term decisions if we explore possibilities before we make tangible commitments. That's exploring. Beautiful use of this very vivid visualization. Number four is problem solving. Now, many of you have very obsessive thoughts, and you know that if you have a problem occur, somebody does something or it's not right, and we just find ourselves spontaneously stewing on it. You know, we're getting dressed in the morning. We wake up to a consciousness that we've been thinking about it since our eyes opened. We just keep thinking about it. That's what happens when the world goes on tilt. This area of thought will not stop thinking till it's been fixed. It's all or nothing. Right or wrong, win or lose, life or death, it has to be fixed or the world is on tilt. Well, give your mind problems to solve. How do we find solutions to this? Because most of the time, our thoughts are tied up in, I don't even deserve it, or why should I ever get it, or it's never happening, or that's not going to generate any ideas. But we give it a problem to solve in a very proactive, positive way. What can I create? How can I create that? How would that serve? How can I move this to the next level? We stay in creation. That's when problems get solved. That's when ideas come to the surface. Because we're creating a fertile ground where an idea can be seed can be planted and grown and sprouted and come to fruition. What a great thing to do. Stay in creation. That's problem solving. And lastly is planning and goal setting. We're coming up on the New Year's. We're going to have a meeting next Tuesday night. It'll be our last one until January 7th because we won't be meeting on Christmas Eve or New Year's Eve. This is the opportunity for us to reflect on next year. What do we want to create next year? What is it we want to create in terms of our relationships, in terms of our finances, in terms of our health? And we want to set goals using this vivid visualization. Go to the future and see clearly what it would be like. And then come back and say, what do I need to do every day, week, month, and year to get there? Whether it's intentionally creating a relationship or generating a certain amount of money or creating better health in your life. This is how we use vivid visualization. So we mentally rehearse short-term events. We seek inspiration. We explore possibilities without making tangible commitments. We problem solve. And using our vivid visualization, we get the dream. We see the long term. Where do we want to be a year from now? Where do we want to be 30 years from now? And come back and start doing the things that would intentionally create that outcome. Because dreams don't just happen. And happiness doesn't just happen. Success doesn't just happen. All are intentionally created. Well, we usually spend time on fantasy and catastrophe when we're in this section. I purposely didn't go into a lot of detail about that tonight. We know when we're in fantasy, going into the future, to a time when we have the money, when our bills are paid off, and then starting to imagine what it's going to be like then. So deadly to someone who's got vivid visualization. We want to go to the future, get the goal, but then come back and take the millimeters, the steps to create it so we can actually experience it. And not just try to keep experiencing it in our mind, what that will be like, because that will not ignite our passion. You can't get a fantasy big enough to ignite passion. Passion's reserved for those who want to do the work. It's designed so that we can do the work without it being so boring and mundane and burdensome and hard. That's what it's there for, is to lift the burden of doing the work. It's to put us in a space where we're open to ideas and people that can serve us and who we can serve and the miracles that occur around all those pieces. It's there to support us in that process. We don't get passion when we fantasize because we're trying to skip the very thing for which passion was designed. Well, you all know that this is a topic that's dear to my heart. I have a red goal-oriented. I have a red honorable. tremendous expectations. Tremendous. And staying reeled into the millimeters can sometimes be really difficult, the details of it all. It's so much fun to go in the future and imagine. I want to emphasize that vivid visualization is a powerful and necessary component of creation. It's the first step. Mental creation. We create it in our mind. And with the right intention, it ignites our passion. And the passion supports us and drives us in creating the millimeters so that we can actually create the outcome. Now, one last thing tonight. Sometimes we engage in things that aren't healthy and in ways that aren't healthy. One of the prerequisites to this secret desire and real intention of engaging, embracing, and connecting and serving is that what we're doing is noble. It's noble. It's worthy of this intention. So just take a check before you beat yourself up for going into fantasy, because sometimes we just want the money from it, when doing it may not be healthy, at least not the way we've been doing it. So just take a look at it and say, wow, am I trying to skip that which my heart knows is not healthy? Am I trying to? If so, I need to take a look at what I'm doing, or at least how I've been doing it. that in if there's anything that resonates with you. Okay. It's time for me to open this up to any questions that you might have this evening. I'll do my very best to address them. I coach best when I'm addressing someone's challenge. So if anybody has one they would like to discuss tonight or a question, this is your moment. So it's open to you.
Hey, Dave, this is Kat.
Hi, Kat.
Hi, good evening. I don't know how to put this into words, but tonight's topic was exactly what I needed to hear. I paralyze myself a lot on moving forward. I feel I'm a very strong individual, very capable individual. People look up to me, respect me, and I come oftentimes from a place of knowing and trust. You know, people feel that from me. When I'm by myself, this is the interesting part that you spoke about, is and I kind of get my hammer out, is I don't feel, I kind of go into this maybe not so great place, you know, that I'm really not all those things. If you only really knew me, you know, sometimes I just feel like I'm faking it, I guess, until I'm making out or something like that. I don't know how to explain it. But then, you know, when I'm by myself and until I get really pushed up against a deadline, then I go, oh, gosh, you know, now I just don't have any choice. I've just got to push through this and get this done. But did you ever experience that when you're trying to move through something that is new and try to be a better, you know, try something? I don't know how to explain it. You know, I'm struggling with this.
Mm-hmm. Let me ask you a couple questions.
Mm-hmm.
Are we talking about your business?
Yes.
Okay. And you're in the network marketing business, correct?
That is one business I have, yes. That's okay. The one I'm really wanting to move more toward. Yes.
Okay. I just want everybody on the phone to understand, because I think I knew those answers. I just want to have everybody else on board with us. A couple of things that are critical, and that's why I mentioned the last thing I said tonight. I happen to love network marketing. I think it's a really noble profession. But I also want to tell you there are some things that have been done over the last couple of decades that when they're employed, offend your very soul. And part of the challenge of moving something forward is not just our lack of discipline. Sometimes we're bumping up against our own intuition. Now, this is not a reflection on any company or its products. That's not the point. It's how we're doing it. We want to take a look and say, am I having the success that I'm telling other people they can have? Am I making it sound bigger or better than it actually is in my own life? And do I then just point to other people who happen to have created success and say, you can do it like them, but I don't know how because I haven't yet? Because I can tell you, if we fake it till we make it, it cannot be faked. There's two things happen. A person has mirror neurons. We've talked about this before, but I'll just bring it into this context. They have mirror neurons. Those mirror neurons can read every muscle on our face. There's 200 sets of muscles. We cannot fake our discomfort. We cannot fake our own fear. We cannot fake our own frustration or discouragement. No matter how much we try to smile, it's going to leak out on our face or in the tone of our voice or in our posture. And that person's mirror neurons are going to pick it up. They won't consciously know it, but their mirror neurons will. And it will send a message to the brain. The brain sends out chemicals to the body, and they feel a little uncomfortable. And your intuition is high enough, Kat, to feel that. It's like we just violated their space. And we can feel their reaction to it. Even though they consciously don't even know why, they just reacted. They haven't even had a conscious thought yet. It's that fast. And our empathy and intuition has picked it up. The number one killer of network marketers, the number one killer is fantasy. The number two killer is doing anything that offends their own intuition. Because it stops you in your tracks from doing it again or doing it enough times to create success. And then we have a conversation around the fact that you're just experiencing fear. You need to overcome your fear. And what we know, Kat, about fear is this. When we jump in, now I know that action reduces the lion of terror to an ant of equanimity. To reduce the flutters in my heart, I must act without hesitation. Scroll number 9. We know these are principles. This is the great secret that he'd learned, that action brings peace of mind. And if we keep doing something over and over again, and all it does is create, then we need to examine what we're doing. I've said to networkers for a lot of years, and it's hard for leaders to hear it, but it's the truth. And that is, the conversations need to be more genuine, more real. Because the realness is picked up by a person's mirror neurons, and it's attractive. It draws people in, the right people. If we're just talking to people that want to get rich quick, and that's the kind of conversation, then we're in the wrong place anyway. Because a networker, their responsibility is to find someone, then lift them and build them and turn them into a business owner. The person obviously has to bring their own desire and work ethic with it, but that's the mission. The mission isn't to get rich so you can have a lifestyle. That's how it's been sold for the last 20 years, and it's a falsehood. Very, very few can ever leave their business and expect it to stay intact. It's just not true. This is an opportunity to work a business and lift and build and find the joy that comes in helping other people succeed. Because as they succeed, they help more people succeed and more people succeed. And what happens? Our income flows. Service causes money to flow. If we're trying to create money and we're chasing money, it runs. And part of the reason why it runs is we're violating the very principles of connection. Now, Kat, I'm not suggesting you are. I'm just being very courageous tonight to have you take a look at this and say, what would be different if I dropped all pretense and I got really clear about what my products really do to bless lives? I get really clear about what I'm willing to do to help that person create success. I have my Ogmandino principles in my back pocket. And my mission is to go find people who are like-minded. And the conversation changes. And one of the most exciting things that's been happening in my life, you would say, is I have taken on my fears and my doubts. I'm learning to love myself so that I can love others more fully. I've been taking some great products that are improving my health. Does any of what I just shared with you mean anything to you? Oh, yeah. What part? Well, you said fear and doubt. Talk to me about that. Can you hear the conversation? This is a totally different network marketing conversation. And until it becomes this conversation, the only people who are going to succeed in this business are the hammers. Because they intimidate people. They're followers. They're groupies. They're cats that have to be herded. They end up massive downlines and 500 phone calls a week, and they don't know how to handle them because they haven't created leaders who can stand on their own, who can find leaders who can stand on their own. That's your mission. And people have spent years in this business chasing this dream. Well, stop chasing the dream and start building the people and having a different conversation, because that one's fun to have, and it will not violate your intuition. It won't offend your heart and spirit, nor will it offend theirs. They may not be interested, but you'll have a deep, rich, wonderful conversation with them about what matters most in life. And if that's important to them, then you can explore possibilities.
Right.
And can you imagine having this conversation where you say to someone, have you ever talked to someone about network marketing before? Oh, yeah. Did it sound anything at all like this conversation? No. Well, let's have these kinds of conversations because this is a worthy profession. And I represent incredibly amazing products. And you can too. And you can build a business. And I'll show you how. How's yours doing? Well, so far I'm getting over my fear and doubt. I'm having genuine conversations with you. I know now that if I do this enough, I won't worry about the money. My question is, you want to wait till I get the money? Or would you like to join me and take on your fears and doubts? What would that mean to you? What would it be like to you? Imagine where we'd be a year from now. And everything I've learned the hard way, I can help you avoid.
So, Dave, are you saying that when I'm, because the question was about when I'm by myself and I'm not really facing anybody and I'm not doing anything, or I probably should be picking up the phone or should be making some contacts and connections, that I'm really in that moment really just kind of up against the belief or the intuition, and I'm bumping up against perceived things from my belief of network marketing, or
I'm not saying you are. I'm exploring the possibility that if what I've shared with you is true, it will stop you in your tracks in your private moments. You can't pick up the phone and have another fake conversation. Your heart won't let you. And you beat yourself up because I'm undisciplined, or I'm not a hard worker, or I've never been like this anywhere else in my life.
Right.
Well, I doubt, you know, in that moment, if that's the conversation, then you can say, yeah, but I've never tried to fake it till I make it anywhere else either. I've never tried to be deceitful anywhere else either. Wow. Maybe I ought to be here like I've been everywhere else, just myself, and just the truth of it. And if that's not enough, that's okay. Because I don't want to bring people into my organization who need more than the truth. Because they won't stick around. I'll get a month or two out of them in an auto ship, and they'll be gone. So I get $5 a month. I'll get $10 for 30 hours of work. That makes a lot of sense. I'm not rambling. I'm just having you explore, because I could be totally wrong about what's going on in your life. But if you're stopped dead in your tracks, Kat, and I know enough about you that that is not your character.
Mm-hmm. And it's really not. It feels like a mountain I have to crawl over, and yet I firmly believe in the products and firmly believe in how they're helping me. I seem to not get around some of these other things that are rattling around in my brain.
Well, take a look at that mountain and put the name on it, integrity, and tell me whether you want to climb over that one. In other words, get over it. In other words, stop worrying about it. Or whether you want to, whether you'd like to have a road or a tunnel through it that says integrity. I want to be integrous. I'm not going to compromise anything. I do have great products. I do have a great company. But what is my secret desire? Truly, when I am by myself, am I still dreaming about how much money I'm going to make and what I'm going to do with it when I get it? Or are my thoughts about the people I can serve and where are they? What do they need? What's their greatest pain? Put them on my path, and I will serve them. I'm not here to get rich so I don't have to serve. I'm here to get rich so I can serve even more. And I can can tell you that's rarely the
support.
Can you feel it? That's rarely the intention.
Yeah.
It's what we say outwardly, but secretly, where does our mind go when we just want to go freewheel on possibilities? Or you get back from a convention. Oh, my goodness. Most people come back from a convention. It takes them weeks to get off their fantasy highs. Just, it's crippling.
Sure.
I wrote a white paper about this last year that'll never be published, so with some of my frustrations about how that can be done. Great companies, great products, but teaching people to fantasize unknowingly by propping all this great stuff in front of them. And they go home and just imagine what it's going to be like when they get there. And then they go to talk to people and they violate their space. And it's not about the people. It's not about serving them, not really. It's about getting rich so I can walk on that stage and have that airplane and fly to France. And, you know, that's really where our mind almost always is. And if we can get honest about this, anybody who's on the phone tonight who's in network marketing can get deadly honest about this one piece and go, wow, what would happen if I stopped myself in the middle of that fantasy and started focusing on a person I could serve? What difference would be at the end of the night in terms of whether I've got an idea of what to say the next day or how to say it, and whether or not I actually do say it? And what comes as a result of that, doing that enough times over and over and over again, versus continuing to feed my mind the poison of fantasy? It's poison. Question? You doing okay, Kat? I'm really being courageous tonight, so I hope you're not offended, because it's not intended to offend at all.
No, I'm not offended at all. In fact, I've heard you talk about this in all the phone conversations I've been on, and I'm hearing the same thing over and over again, and it's just like, tonight, I'm hearing it in such a different way that it's really fitting better, and I'm understanding it better. So thank you for just staying on that and just keep bringing that forth, because I, you know, at some point it's got to click. I think somebody else had a question too.
Well, thank you for raising the question. Does somebody else have a question?
I do. It's Catherine.
Okay. Hi, Catherine.
Hi.
Catherine, what a deal.
What a deal. And thank you, Kat, for that question and what's come, because I will listen about again. And my question ties in with it in that in what you've talked about tonight in you know, how to do the mental rehearsal and how to do these steps, I think that it's a great skill. And I know you took us through that in the, you know, in our smaller group coaching, but I don't feel like I'm even close to catching on how to develop the skill of doing this. And so I'm wondering if you can either give us more direction or steer me back to the website or the book or someplace that helps me do this, because, you know, I'm hearing you say the steps, but I don't quite get how to do it.
Okay. There's two places. One, your Intentional Creation Studio, quality number two. That's a place to look. And the other is in the book, Today I Begin a New Life. And it starts on page 168, Powerful Processes. That'll give you a lot more detail. Here's the secret, Catherine.
Mm-hmm.
People say, Dave, you're so good at this. It's like you just come up with all these ideas. You're so creative. And I smile and say, the only difference between me and a person who's not doing this is their willingness to surrender to the process. The practice comes in letting go of the desire for ease, letting go of the desire for quick money, letting go of, that's what we're letting go of, because the more we let go of it and the more we show up genuinely with a burning desire to serve another person, it's that burning desire that drives the process. No one need tell us how to mentally rehearse. If all we want to do in that meeting we've got tomorrow is bring something to that will help lift and build them and change their life, and we get all these great ideas. The only thing that pulls us back from those ideas is negative self-talk. I can't do this. I haven't got the ability. Shut off all that noise, because the sooner that noise gets shut off, and the sooner our intention is pure, truly wanting to bless, it just unfolds. That's what unfolds it. Because it's not our skill. It's plugging into a universe who is now going to give you the gift. But we have to be ready to receive it. It's willing to give. It's there for the asking. It's just that we're not asking that. I long to cry to the God of my youth, but the God of my youth will not hear my cry. I must change my God or change my cry. This is the cry that must be changed. We can or we want to change. No more ease, no more desire to escape, no more, just want to be out of debt. It's all about, what can I create to serve this person? How can I create that? When our desire is pure and the noise in our head is shut off, it's given to us. And then we just act on it. And the practice comes in trusting it and acting on it and creating something we wouldn't have had otherwise. So the next time we get it, we trust it, because we want to act on it as if it's an urgent assignment. Because we just asked for it. We just got it. Well, why would we question what we just got? Go act on it. And then you'll get more, and then you get more. This is the way that it works. Now, mental rehearsal, I can give you the technique. We go to the future, and I use an example in the book, and I'll share it with you tonight, because this is a classic example. I'm working with a client, an executive woman. She happened to be a black woman, and she had felt for her whole life that it was difficult, her whole career, that it's difficult being an executive and being black and living in Texas. That's where she lived. A lot of issues. A lot of stuff pent up inside of her. Now, she was responsible for putting together a charity event. She brought the charity together with a restaurant and a caterer, you know, food and all that kind of stuff. And when they got done with the evening, they discovered nobody had discussed how the open bar was going to be handled. Was the charity going to pay for it, or was that a donation from the hotel? Hotel's position was, heck no. We donated the food. We're not going to donate the open bar. That was twice as much as the food. And the charity's going, well, that'll wipe out all of our profit. And so both of them were looking at my client like, you were in charge. At least that's how she was feeling about it. Well, the next day, she was going to go meet with this group. There are going to be three of them in the room. She's going to meet with these three people to work out the details. And she had already started stewing on this, because she already has vivid visualization, obsessive thought processes that everybody on this phone has. She's already in that space, but she wasn't thinking constructively. She was thinking destructively. Well, I've got to defend this, and I've got to come up with this idea. And she had her whole plan of attack prepared. She was going to sit behind the walls of her fortress and shoot cannons at everybody and blow holes in their ideas of why she should be responsible. I said, well, let's take a different tact. And it was time to teach mental rehearsal, so I started to share it with her. Let's put ourselves in the time tomorrow. I can see you walking across the street, going to the front door and now to the elevator. And I happened to, in my mind, see her carrying something in her hand. I said, what are you carrying? A sack. What's in that sack? That paper sack. And she wasn't used to this, so she wasn't there yet. She was just trying to, she was still in her anger. She says, what do you see? And I said, I see three light switches. Light switches? Yeah, so when you get up there, you hand one to everybody. And just tell them that they don't like what you're saying, just flip the switch and you can fry me. I thought it was funny. It kind of loosened up the energy a little bit. And she said, I know what's in the sack. And I said, what? She said, tomatoes. I said, why tomatoes? Well, I'm going to give everybody a tomato. If they don't like what I say, they can throw the tomato at me. I said, perfect. So you got a sack of tomatoes. Now you're going up the elevator. Now go walk into the room and sit down. Very first thing I want you to do is step into the world of the person on your left. Who would that be? She told me who that was. Who, you know, anticipating where one of the three would sit. Okay, step into their world. What's been going on in their life this morning before they came? So, I don't know. How would I know that? Well, is there anybody that would know? Is there any power that would know? Well, she believed in God, so she said God. And I said, yeah, then why don't you ask them? What are they going to be going through tomorrow morning before they show up? And she just, I said, just be open to ideas. Maybe they got in a fight with their spouse, or they've got a teenager that's got a problem. Just be with it for a minute. Just kind of feel those kinds of issues. So we started exploring possibilities. And she started loosening up. We went to the next person. We stepped into their world. And she remembered some things about this person. So she kind of could take from some little clues that there might be more to those clues. And she got deeper and deeper. Then she went to the third person. By the time we got done, she was excited for the meeting tomorrow morning. Totally different energy. Well, in our next conversation, I said, how did it go? Did you buy the tomatoes? And she said, yeah, I bought them and put them in a sack and set them by my chair. You didn't use them? No. What'd you do with them? I took them home and ate them. That's what she said. And we both laughed about it. And I said, was that an incorrect inspiration? She said, no, because it lightened my mood. It anchored me. It's like a It's called a talisman. It's like a coin we would carry in our pocket to remind us of something. Those tomatoes reminded her to show up for those people. And she stepped into the world of the first one. Then she stepped into the world of the second one. Then she stepped into the world of the third one. Not just anticipating how was your morning. Share with me what you're thinking. Help me better understand your position. Well, thank you for sharing. Well, tell me more about that one. Okay? Now, share with me your thoughts. When she got all done, they solved the problem. Not her. They solved the problem. Well, we could do this. Yeah, we could do that. Would that work? Are you okay with that? Yeah, fine. Okay, great. Thanks, everybody, for meeting. And she left. She said her only regret was this. How many times before that meeting she showed up in a different place? How many times she showed up at her anchor, believing that she's a black executive and it's because of her color of her skin that they're going to be tough on her. All that kind of dialogue she's had going on for all of her life and all of her professional life, for sure. And all of a sudden she discovered that when she shows up in agape love, stepping into a person's world, caring about them, noticing what's important, truly understanding their position till they felt understood, walls came down everywhere. As Og said, with love I can melt all hearts, like in the sun whose rays soften the coldest clay. I don't know if we're going in the right direction. You doing okay, Catherine? So that's a mental rehearsal. That's a mental rehearsal.
So that's great. And my question is even a bit more mundane, perhaps, because, again, your skill in just picturing that and something came up. So when I've done a couple times to try to do this mental rehearsal, if I'm not getting a picture, or, you know, I know I'm going somewhere to something and I can't imagine what it's like, or I don't know what this setting is like or whatever, then what do I do? That's.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I think I can help you a little bit with that. Because it's not always pictures, it's impressions. You just get this impression. Now, I'm getting to a point where I start to see pictures. I'll give you an example. Mm-hmm. In April, I was in Dallas speaking. I was going to speak to the SMU football team. And I went 2 days early to help June Jones, the coach of the SMU football team, with his 2020 project, which is for elementary kids, to come and spend a day at the stadium, all from inner-city schools where they have a 60% dropout rate. I mean, it's unbelievable. And they had 4,000 kids there and not a single incident all day. It was just a beautiful thing. And that night we went to his house and we had this wonderful conversation, and I met Lee Steinberg, the Jerry Maguire of sports agents. I had done his assessment 2 months before. I never met him, but I'd done his assessment. And we sat there and we talked and became good friends. And then Sunday we all went to church at June's church uptown Dallas, Trinity Church. Great sermon. Then June and I went to the SMU banquet that night. But in between those two, I'm sitting in my hotel room. If you don't know what it looks like, just be in the space. I happened to be in the space. On Saturday, I was actually there. I knew exactly what it looked like. If I had not been there, I would have just pictured 65 athletes in front of me, and I don't know that I'd have seen 65 red leather chairs in a stadium setting. I don't know. I would have seen that picture. I wouldn't have seen it. But I could see it because I'd actually been there. So if we've been in a meeting before, and we know where we might be sitting in a restaurant, if we've been to the restaurant before, or we've had that kind of conversation before, it's not as important what the tables and chairs look like. Just put yourself in the space with the person. Just with the person. I put myself with those people, and here I am mentally rehearsing my speech with these athletes. What could I say to 18, 19, 20, 21-year-old guys that would get them excited about life? I'm getting inspired ideas, and all of a sudden, it's the strangest thing, Catherine, I turn to Lee Steinberg and ask him to speak. And I'm going, that was weird. I don't think he's going to be there. What was that all about? So on the way to the banquet, I told June Jones about it. I said, are there any problems with a sports agent talking to a football team? And he said, no, as long as he doesn't offer them anything. I said, what do you think of this experience I just had? And he said, that's a God thing. Yeah, I said, are you okay if I invite him? He said, absolutely. So I got back to the hotel. I called him, invited him, and he came. And he says, what do you want me to say, Dave? And I said, I don't know. But I'll know when to call on you, and you will know what to say. You okay with that? And he said, yeah, that'd be great. So that's what we did. And I got to this point in the conversation, and I knew it was time. And I introduced him and had him get up, and he delivered the perfect message in that moment in the speech. One of my board members was in the room. He'd never heard me speak before, and he just loved this combination. And the conversation was, you guys need to do this more often. I had no idea until then, and flying home, I'm going, yeah, we got to do this more often. Then I started thinking about where he was, and I called the friend who introduced me to him in the first place and found out, as public knowledge, Lee cratered 5 years ago because of his alcoholism and blew up his practice. I mean, Troy Aikman was a client. Barkowski was a client. Steve Young was a client. Warren Moon, Earl Campbell, if you're football fans, those names mean something. They're all football Hall of Famers. I mean, these were his clients. It blew apart. He's been sober now for 4 years, and it's time to launch his practice, and he's trying to raise money to do that. And I called Lee, and I said, Lee, do you need some help with this? And he said, yeah, do you have an idea? And I do. I made a phone call. Within 2 weeks, we're sitting down in Houston, Texas, with a bunch of guys who flew in with their private airplanes, you know? And last month, we launched his practice. We raised the money that was required and launched his practice. Had 200 million impressions on the internet the first week he was launched. That was October 4th. Features on ESPN, Today. I mean, Lee Steinberg's back. He's going to represent some incredible players. His book's coming out next month about his journey. It's called Agent. He is. He's Jerry Maguire. That's who he is. And he's been so humbled. He was living in a friend's house, sleeping in a twin bed for part of that time. He was down to nothing. And Lee's back. And we're fast friends. And now we're formally taking what's now performance metrics back out to the athletic world. And I ask you the question, what would have happened if I wouldn't have trusted that impression? What would have happened if that mental rehearsal hadn't occurred? And I'm saying this to everyone. I'm not a special case. I just do it and trust the inspiration and act on it all the time. And I could give you 100 more examples of things that have changed my life at a core level because that was the intention. How could we serve? How could we take these 65 athletes and create something that they would never forget? Inspiration. He blessed their lives. But the key was where we are now as friends and business partners. This would have never happened. I'd have come home and written them a note and say, it was great to see you on Saturday, and say, great to see you, Dave, but that would be the end of it. Mm. He now and I, we just got back from Houston 2 weeks ago. We're speaking down there to the Greater Houston Builders Association. What a great experience working together. Many more are coming. Just because you take something like that, it's so important. And anybody on the phone, Catherine, take anything you've got coming in the next day or two, no matter how big or little, and just put yourself there and keep asking, what could I do to serve? What could I do to serve? How could I make that person's life better? And you get an idea. It could be little. And that's okay. The little ones earn the privilege to get the big ones. We act on the little one. Then we get a bigger one, then we get a bigger one, then a bigger one. And pretty soon, miraculous things are happening in our life because our intention is to bless a life, and the inspiration that comes, we trust and act on. We want to live here. Now, I do want to share emphatically, I don't always live here. I'm not posturing myself as the perfect example. I just know that when I choose to do this, miracles happen. And I want to do it more frequently. I get depressed. I get discouraged just like anybody else. I get overwhelmed. I get exhausted. That's just life. But if we can, say, not going there today. I'm not going to go into catastrophe, fantasy, doubt, fear, wanting ease. I'm going to have a pure intent. I want to bless that person's life. What could I do? And watch what comes. Because you'll have dialogues, I don't have money for that, or I don't have time for that, you'll hear all kinds of stuff, and it's like the universe is going, what are you doing? I want so much to bless your life. I want so much to give you the very things you are looking for. But you got to engage to get them. So keep it small and be okay with the little impressions. And it's not about a vision. Sometimes it can be a vision. That Lee Steinberg was like a vision. Sometimes it's just an idea, just a little impression.
And I know we're running late, but that leads into another question. So is it fair to use that? So again, what I picked out of that this last little bit was just putting myself in a situation and saying, how could I serve? Is it fair to do that for situations that's not necessarily serving somebody else? I'm putting myself into a situation, I have to figure out some things or whatever and say, you know, how can I serve? I mean, I feel like in the end, the more that I help myself, the more I am able to serve. So does it seem unfair that I can use that for just figuring out things for how to proceed for myself as well?
As long as your intention is that I want to engage in life, embrace principles, connect, serve, create value, and contribute. If that's the intent, then you go to any question, any problem. I'll give you an example. I'll give you one more that has nothing to do with a person. We've been renting a house for, it was our old house. We never sold it. We've been renting it to tenants for 6 years. And our tenants left on October 31st. And it took us like 10 days to get the place cleaned up. We got all cleaned up. My wife walks in one day, and she's been mentally rehearsing the house, just thinking about it. We'd certainly love to have the equity out of it. We use the equity out of it to buy this one. You know, so we'd like to get that one off our debt list, you know, the loan paid off, and get that out of our lives. We'd just love to have that happen. And Ramona said, I just had this impression, because remember, it's an inspired idea or an impression. Or a solution to a challenge. She said, I have an impression we need to sell the house right now. And my mind immediately went into, oh, I've got to hire a real estate agent, and there's a commission, and it's winter's coming, and, you know, you can hear it all. Why don't we just rent it again? You know, is that kind of a thing? But I've learned to trust Ramona's impressions. I was sick that day. I had a cold, but I went down to the house. The guy was fixing the garage. He needed some help, and I helped him out. He needed to go down the store, so I went with him to get something. And I thought, I'm going to buy the signs right now. Right now. Because it hit me. Follow Ramona's impression. Mm-hmm. Nobody spoke to me. It was just, I needed to do that. So I got a big, thick magic marker and a for sale sign. And just for safekeeping, a for rent sign. Got both of them. Came back to the house, wrote our phone number on them, stuck both of them side by side in the yard. And we got a call before the day was out. And by the this is Saturday. Following Saturday, it's in escrow. It's going to close on the 22nd of December. It's gone. And we got full price.
Uh-huh. Cool.
Solution to a problem.
Perfect example. Thank you.
Perfect example. It solved our problem. But it was still a mental rehearsal. Yeah. And it makes it easier for us to serve, just like you said. It's one less headache.
Yep.
Okay. Well, thanks, everybody. Thanks for going here tonight. I hope my examples didn't exhaust anyone. Kat and Catherine, thank you for your input. It's always wonderful when you ask these questions and we get to explore. Everybody have a wonderful week. We'll be back next Tuesday night. And then just remember the 24th and the 30th, we won't be meeting. 24th and 31st, I'll get that right, because of Christmas and New Year's, and then we'll be back on the 7th. So next Tuesday night, we'll be taking on physical creation. Let's talk about how to get these ideas and act on them in a passion-driven fashion and stay present in the now, because this is one of our great challenges. We spend more time in our heads than we do in the now, and this is where the work's done. And we just want to bring the passion with us so the work's not so boring and mundane and repetitious and hard. So thanks, everybody. Come off of mute and just say good night.
Good night, everybody. Thank you.
Good night.
Take care.
Thanks, everyone. So great to have you on the call, everyone. Thanks. Good night.